All right. So, like I said before, our final was scheduled for May 7th, which is the last Monday of final week. So it was 2 weeks after our last day of class. I think that's way too long to wait. You know, like I want you guys the material fresh in your head. And I certainly don't want anyone having to wait around on campus for like a week just to take one final that's worth 10% of your grade. You know, I'd rather you get your summer going. So they've allowed me to reschedule it for, what do we have it for? For May 1st, which is a Tuesday. So that's only a little over, that's, you know, 8 days after the last day of class. It'll be 6 p.m. And then we'll do some kind of networking event afterwards, which is kind of a tradition, although I've only taught this class once, so we'll be making a tradition by doing it again, and those details will be TBA. But to move the time for the course, we need to have everyone initial this petition, so hopefully everyone else will show up later today so we can get this done, but if you guys could just initial it so we can move the final, that'd be good. And then also, you know, I sent out another email last night about the project pitches, so you know, just think about it, you know, this week and next week, and then just send me your pitch that Sunday right at the end of spring break, and then there'll be no class that Monday, the 12th, I believe, and just sign up for your time slot. And if we run out of time slots, just email me, because I didn't put one per student, because I figured there would be some teams, so there's a little bit less than one per student there. So today what I'll do is I'll talk until about 9:30, then we'll have two student presentations, one on Monte Carlo on the GPU, then another on OpenGL 4 and tessellation shaders. And that's good because I'm going to finish up the graphics pipeline right now. So then you'll see, Sean will show us kind of the very current generation graphics pipeline. And then hopefully what we've been doing with the graphics pipeline you guys will find useful for when you start doing the assignments after spring break. Because last spring, I only did one lecture on the graphics pipeline. Like I threw everyone in the graphics pipeline. I'm like, okay, let's start coding this thing. And hopefully now that we're doing basically, you know, 2.5, hopefully that is a lot of good background, especially for those of you that might not necessarily have a full graphics background. Okay, so with that said, we'll pick up more or less where we left off last week, where we looked at the graphics pipeline, but we didn't say anything about really burning it into hardware and how that has evolved over the past, you know, 15 years on commodity graphics. So, you know, we kind of started with where we didn't have hardware, we did everything in software. And then we started taking this pipeline and we burned it into hardware where we could configure it, where we could say, hey, we're going to be able to turn the depth test on or off, or we're going to be able to use this texture and maybe multiply those two values. Well, you couldn't program it, you could just kind of configure it. And then the GPU started becoming programmable, where you could take parts of that pipeline and actually put your own code injected in there. And then we'll see, kind of will bring us up to the current stuff that we've been looking at with the G80, where it's really now, the GPU is a very general processor that just has a little bit of specialized hardware for graphics sitting around. You know, we said, okay, for the PC, we looked at Wolfenstein and Doom, and we said, you know, these were done in software, there's a lot of limitations. When you look, for example, on the left at Wolfenstein, there's really no lighting. The ceiling and the floor are the same color. All the enemies are always facing the user. So they got incredible performance even on really old hardware because they really were able to simplify the problem, and they pre-computed a lot of things. And then soon after that, Carmack and id came out with Doom. It had some amount of dynamic light, and it was still 2.5D, but the Z could go up and down. Again, no hardware here. So we go, okay, well, we look at the data pipe, or we look at the graphics pipeline, and we go, well, maybe we can build hardware for this, because there's parallelism everywhere, and we could really exploit that with hardware. You know, the graphics pipeline itself is pipeline parallel, and that you can continuously throw triangles in it, even while other triangles are in flight. It's data parallel, and that many of those stages, vertex shading, fragment shading, rasterization, we can run those in parallel. You could run basically the same vertex shader on different vertices, so we call that data parallel, because it's the same instruction on different data. And then we could also, if we have separate hardware, if we had a coprocessor, it would be like the CPU will issue draw calls, and we'll start feeding that pipeline, but then it doesn't have to wait for that pipeline to finish. The CPU will keep going while the GPU does that in parallel. So now you really offload the CPU as the GPU does the rendering. And then there's a number of things that we said that were good for graphics that we can fit, that we can burn into hardware, in particular texture filtering or vectorization. If you burn them into hardware, it's much faster than what we could do in software. So I think we finished here last week, which was we looked at the 3DFX Voodoo chip, where they only took the back end of the pipeline, basically rasterization and fragment shading and depth testing, and they put it into hardware. You know, they charged $300 for it, which is, you could buy a really nice, what would you buy, like a 590 or something, a GeForce 590 for that price now. Vertex shading and all the vertex assembly, that was still done in software. And, you know, it kind of makes sense when you're looking for bang for your buck. In general, you're going to have a lot more fragments than you are triangles in most scenes for most camera views. So they started by just taking the most expensive stuff and putting it into hardware. This could only read from a single texture. So basically a texture was color. You know, you would read the color and then you'd output the color, right? And we'll see how that has evolved significantly. Okay, so just an aside here, around the same time that the Voodoo card came out, we had the Nintendo 64, right? Nintendo 64 is like 1996 or so. Let's look at this scene. So this is Mario Kart. I'm definitely a big fan of the Mario Kart series, more from like a player point of view. I mean, the graphics are cool and all as well, but let's look at this scene. So tell me, you know, like how many triangles do you think this scene is? And you don't have to give me like an exact number, but you can tell me there's a lot, there's a little, and just justify why you think one way or the other. Several hundred. Hundreds tops. Okay,
that's
why?
Very
okay, so look at Mario or Luigi there. Look at the players. How many triangles do you think they are?
Zero.
Zero. There's sprites. So I'll give you partial credit. I'd say two triangles to draw the sprite, okay? You see what I'm saying? It's probably two triangles and it's just a texture. Okay. So let's look at the wall on the right hand side. How many triangles do you think that is? Yeah, not many. 16. Not many. Right? So 16 is a good guess. And the texture that's laid onto this is probably 2x2. Right? Like and it's just repeated over and over again. Right? So there's not even a lot of texture data there. Come again? Tree's probably a sprite. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you would notice that if you, depending on the angle, if it's always looking the same. Or they might change that as well. Then look at the road. The road, again, you know, that's very low, very low poly count. So, strangely enough, the Nintendo 64 actually did vertex transform and vertex shading in hardware. And it was SGI hardware. I thought for the longest time, I just figured as a user, I'm like, oh man, that must be done in software because the poly count is so low. But that's not true. It actually was done in hardware. I just have a feeling that hardware was they didn't throw a lot of hardware at it. Now, even more recently, so 2006, here's Mario Kart Wii, right? Which, as far as I know, this is the latest Mario Kart that is out on the Nintendo Wii. Well, I don't know what's going on in their mobile world. But what do you guys think about the poly count here, or the triangle count?
The ground is still fairly low poly count, because you can see that it's just like not
enough. Yeah, does everyone see that? This is planar right here. There's not too many triangles. And they use what would be the alpha test, but that's now deprecated in OpenGL. But they just have the texture that has alpha values, and if alpha is zero, they just discard the fragment. They get rid of it. And that's why you can see through it. So they're faking a lot of geometry for each of these wood planks, but it's not actual geometry.
But the actual cars are fairly high.
Yes, so these are actually modeled now with actual geometry as opposed to impostures. And then on the far left here, that railing, again, that's probably just a little bit of triangles with just alpha now. So even in a lot of Nintendo games, I still see a pretty low triangle count. But they still get a pretty good looking scene. And even, you know, I forget the PlayStation 3 game I was playing, but even they had a lot of tricks like this, definitely with the foliage. It's very, very common. Okay, so the graphics pipeline and hardware has evolved, and the GeForce 256 came out. in 1999, and now they put the entire stage, the entire pipeline in hardware. The other thing that's maybe even more important, actually, the other thing that probably had a bigger impact was that now you could read from multiple textures at the same time. And that means that not only could you read a texture because you care about your diffuse map, you care about color, but you could do things now like bump mapping. Remember when I showed you guys the earth and the mountains kind of showed through? You need to read two textures for that. You need to read your diffuse map and your bump map, right? And then other things where you can burn light into textures, like if you have a court, you know, if you have a hallway, you have a bunch of lights on it, you might use a technique called light mapping, where you burn the light into the texture, so you don't have to do all those computations. Now things like that became possible. So this was a pretty big deal. And they were saying 10 million polygons per second. Again, I don't know what a polygon is. I don't know. I know what triangles are. I don't know how many triangles that amounts to, but that was what they said. Then the GeForce 3 came around, and now they started saying, okay, this fixed function pipeline is kind of limited. We really want to be, it's limiting the amount of stuff that we can do. It'd be great if we could program some of these stages. Instead of just being able to turn them on or off, what if I could take a tiny little program, for you guys, think maybe CUDA kernel at the moment, and jam that in some of these stages, for example, the vertex shader, because we talked about, remember that pulsing example with the alien moving in and out? We said that, you know, I showed you basically one line of code to compute that displacement, and it would be cool if we could put that code into and inject it in this pipeline, and we call those shaders. So when GeForce 3 came out, we could program the vertex shader. They say you can program the fragment shader. It was very, very limited to the point where I don't know how successful that really was. And you could either have... You could either use your vertex shader or you could use the default fixed function shader path. So it's really interesting. Sometimes I'm so used to living in a world where I have to use shaders because that's what WebGL looks like and that's what modern OpenGL looks like. But sometimes I look at like some older code at my work and I forget that you only have to put in a shader in certain areas. You don't have to use a shader everywhere. Interesting aside here, when you look at Pentium 4, which is the processor at the time, 20-stage pipeline, right? This GeForce 3, depending on what was turned on or off, those 600 to 800 stages. So it's very, very deep. And I assume that is on a fixed function path, and that wasn't, I don't know if that includes if you're actually writing your shaders. And at this point, don't even, like, I know you put loops and stuff in your CUDA kernels. Don't even think about loops yet. These are very simple programs. Okay, so finally, GeForce 6 came around, and this card, it's worth spending a few minutes looking at it, because it was pretty good, and a lot of, when you look at WebGL, you look at OpenGL ES2, and the foundations for what's now OpenGL 3 and 4, this card supports all of that, which is great. And those are great foundations to learn. In fact, that's kind of what I'm focusing on with our graphics pipeline, is really the WebGL and OpenGL 2, because once you know them, there's so many areas that you can work in graphics, whether it's on the web, on mobile, on embedded systems, you know, or on high-end desktops. But with the GeForce 6, the vertex shader and the fragment shader, they were fully programmable, where you can inject your own programs, again, think CUDA kernels, to replace the default shading with your own. The vertex shaders could read from textures. Previously, they weren't able to do that. However, reading from textures was pretty limited. If you read, the texture had to be in a certain format. Like, it had to be, you know, floating point RGBA as opposed to, like, unsigned byte. I'm not sure if that's the exact format, but it would only support a certain format, and if you didn't have those formats, it would run really, really slow, and a lot of people would complain about that. You had actual branches now, and I'll explain exactly what I mean by dynamic branch. We had multiple render targets, which meant our vertex shader could output multiple colors, kind of like we talked about earlier, where a fragment shader could output multiple colors or multiple data in general. It doesn't necessarily have to be color. Unfortunately, we can't do that in WebGL yet, and it's driving me crazy. And this also, I know I didn't speak much about the buses, but this moved to a PCI Express bus. Previously, the cards were AGP. PCI Express has a nice benefit in that reading back is as fast as going down. Like they say, it's an asymmetric bus. So let's look at this GeForce 6 in a little more detail. So Vertex shaders can read textures. So one use for this is displacement mapping, which is doesn't look that great here, but we have a texture that's a displacement map, which looks a lot like a bump map where black is dark and white is high, right? So it just illuminates for the light. And then a vertex shader, you can read a displacement map and then move your vertex. You can displace your vertex, just like we displaced it with the pulsing example. And this is a big deal, and it's really cool for terrain. One way to render terrain is vertex shader displacement, and you can actually, if you have a terrain and you have a bunch of different uniformly tessellated tiles for different parts of that terrain, you render the same geometry, the same tile, and you just keep moving it with your model matrix, and you keep giving it a different displacement map. So this way you don't have to have unique geometry all the way throughout your terrain. It's very, very cool. We also have dynamic branches, which means you can imagine a fragment shader that's ray marching through a volume, and as it steps through that volume, you need dynamic branches to determine to do that loop to say when did I actually hit something or when am I finished accumulating opacity. And dynamic branches became a huge deal. However, we got to watch for performance with dynamic branches. For example, let's see, this tree is casting a shadow. And let's say you have an if statement in your shader where you're saying if you're in shadow, you're going to do one thing. If you're not in shadow, you're going to do another thing. We care in screen space, in X and Y in the screen, if all these branches go in the same direction. For example, they're all not in shadow or they're all in shadow, you're going to get good performance. But if in screen space they diverge, meaning some of them are in shadow, some of them aren't, and up there with that red or anywhere around here, you're going to wind up with branch divergence, and the total number of parallelism is going to decrease. What does this look familiar to? Something that we did probably 3 weeks ago. It's CUDA. So in CUDA, branch divergence, when does that matter?